Growth, she said. Do you mean Arrakis can have an orderly cycle of water to sustain human life under more favorable conditions?
Impossible, the water magnate barked.
Jessica turned her attention to Boot.
Impossible?
Impossible on Arrakis, he said. Don't listen to this dreamer. All the laboratory evidence is against him.
Kynes looked at Boot, and Jessica noted that the other conversations around the table had stopped while people concentrated on this new interchange.
Laboratory evidence tends to blind us to a very simple fact, Kynes said. That fact is this. We are dealing here with matters that originated and exist out of doors, where plants and animals carry on their normal existence.
Normal, Boot snorted. Nothing about Arrakis is normal.
Quite the contrary, Kynes said. Certain harmonies could be set up here along self-sustaining lines. You merely have to understand the limits of the planet and the pressures upon it.
It'll never be done, Boot said.
The Duke came to a sudden realization, placing the point where Kynes' attitude had changed. It had been when Jessica had spoken of holding the conservatory plants in trust for Arrakis.
What would it take to set up the self-sustaining system, Dr. Kynes? Leto asked.
If we can get 3% of the green plant element on Arrakis involved in forming carbon compounds as foodstuffs, we've started the cyclic system, Kynes said.
Water's the only problem? The Duke asked.
He sensed Kynes' excitement, felt himself caught up in it.
Water overshadows the other problems, Kynes said. This planet has much oxygen without its usual concomitants. Widespread plant life and large sources of free carbon dioxide from such phenomena as volcanoes. There are unusual chemical interchanges over large surface areas here.
Do you have pilot projects? The Duke asked.
We've had a long time in which to build up the Tansley effect. Small unit experiments on an amateur basis from which my science may now draw its working facts, Kynes said.
There isn't enough water, Boot said. There just isn't enough water.
Master Boot is an expert on water, Kynes said.
He smiled, turned back to his dinner. The Duke gestured sharply down with his right hand, barked,
No, I want an answer. Is there enough water, Dr. Kynes?
Kynes stared at his plate. Jessica watched the play of emotion on his face. He masks himself well, she thought, but she had him registered now and read that he regretted his words.
Is there enough water? The Duke demanded.
There may be, Kynes said.
He's faking uncertainty, Jessica thought. With his deeper truth sense, Paul caught the underlying motive, had to use every ounce of his training to mask his excitement.
There is enough water, but Kynes doesn't wish it to be known.
Our planetologist has many interesting dreams, Boot said. He dreams with the Fremen of prophecies and messiahs.
Chuckles sounded at odd places around the table. Jessica marked them. The smuggler, the stillsuit manufacturer's daughter, Duncan Idaho, the woman with the mysterious escort service.
Tensions are oddly distributed here tonight, Jessica thought. There's too much going on of which I'm not aware. I'll have to develop new information sources.
The Duke passed his gaze from Kynes to Boot to Jessica. He felt oddly let down, as though something vital had passed him here.
Maybe, he muttered.
Kynes spoke quickly.
Perhaps we should discuss this another time, my lord. There are so many...
The planetologist broke off as a uniformed Atreides trooper hurried in through the service door, was passed by the guard and rushed to the Duke's side. The man bent, whispering into Leto's ear. Jessica recognized the cap sign of Howitt's Corps, fought down uneasiness. She addressed herself to the stillsuit manufacturer's feminine companion, a tiny, dark-haired woman with a doll face, a touch of epicanthic fold to the eyes.
"You've hardly touched your dinner, my dear," Jessica said. "May I order you something?"
The woman looked at the stillsuit manufacturer before answering, then...
I'm not very hungry.
Abruptly, the Duke stood up beside his trooper, spoke in a harsh tone of command.
Stay seated, everyone. You will have to forgive me, but a matter has arisen that requires my personal attention.
He stepped aside.
Paul, take over as host for me, if you please.
Paul stood, wanting to ask why his father had to leave, knowing he had to play this with the grand manner. He moved around to his father's chair, sat down in it. The Duke turned to the alcove where Halleck sat, said,
Gurney, please take Paul's place at table. We mustn't have an odd number here. When the dinner's over, I may want you to bring Paul to the field CP. Wait for my call.
Halleck emerged from the alcove in dress uniform, his lumpy ugliness seeming out of place in the glittering finery. He leaned his ballast against the wall, crossed to the chair Paul had occupied, sat down.
"There's no need for alarm," the Duke said, "but I must ask that no one leave until our house guard says it's safe. You will be perfectly secure as long as you remain here, and we'll have this little trouble cleared up very shortly."
Paul caught the code words in his father's message. "Guard, safe, secure, shortly." The problem was security, not violence. He saw that his mother had read the same message. They both relaxed. The Duke gave a short nod, wheeled, and strode through the service door, followed by his trooper. Paul said,
"Please, go on with your dinner. I believe Dr. Kynes was discussing water."
"May we discuss it another time?" Kynes asked.
"By all means," Paul said.
And Jessica noted with pride her son's dignity, the mature sense of assurance. The banker picked up his water flagon, gestured with it at Boot.
"None of us here can surpass Master Lingar Boot in flowery phrases. One might almost assume he aspired to great house status. Come, Master Boot, lead us in a toast. Perhaps you've a dollop of wisdom for the boy who must be treated like a man."
Jessica clenched her right hand into a fist beneath the table. She saw a hand signal pass from Halleck to Idaho, saw the house troopers along the walls move into positions of maximum guard. Boot cast a venomous glare at the banker. Paul glanced at Halleck, took in the defensive positions of his guards, looked at the banker until the man lowered the water flagon. He said,
"Once, on Caladan, I saw the body of a drowned fisherman recovered."
"He drowned?"
It was the stillsuit manufacturer's daughter. Paul hesitated, then,
"Yes, immersed in water until dead. Drowned."
"What an interesting way to die," she murmured.
Paul's smile became brittle. He returned his attention to the banker.
"The interesting thing about this man was the wounds on his shoulders, made by another fisherman's claw boots. This fisherman was one of several in a boat, a craft for traveling on water, that foundered, sank beneath the water. Another fisherman helping recover the body said he'd seen marks like this man's wounds several times. They meant another drowning fisherman had tried to stand on this poor fellow's shoulders in the attempt to reach up to the surface, to reach air."
"Why is this interesting?" the banker asked.
"Because of an observation made by my father at the time. He said the drowning man who climbs on your shoulders to save himself is understandable, except when you see it happen in the drawing room."
Paul hesitated just long enough for the banker to see the point coming, then,
"And I should add, except when you see it at the dinner table."
A sudden stillness enfolded the room.
"That was rash," Jessica thought. "This banker might have enough rank to call my son out."
She saw that Idaho was poised for instant action. The house troopers were alert. Gurney Halleck had his eyes on the men opposite him.
"Ho, ho, ho!"
It was the smuggler, Tuwick, head thrown back laughing with complete abandon. Nervous smiles appeared around the table. Boot was grinning. The banker had pushed his chair back, was glaring at Paul.
Kynes said, "One baits an Atreides at his own risk." "Is it Atreides' custom to insult their guests?" the banker demanded.
Before Paul could answer, Jessica leaned forward, said,
"Sir,"
and she thought,
"We must learn this Harkonnen creature's game. Is he here to try for Paul? Does he have help?" "My son displays a general garment, and you claim it's cut to your fit?" Jessica asked. "What a fascinating revelation."
She slid a hand down to her leg to the kris knife she had fastened in a calf sheath. The banker turned his glare on Jessica. Eyes shifted away from Paul, and she saw him ease himself back from the table, freeing himself for action. He had focused on the code word,
garment. Prepare for violence.
Kynes directed a speculative look at Jessica, gave a subtle hand signal to Tuwick. The smuggler lurched to his feet, lifted his flagon.
"I'll give you a toast," he said. "To young Paul Atreides, still a lad by his looks, but a man by his actions."
"Why do they intrude?" Jessica asked herself.
The banker stared now at Kynes, and Jessica saw terror return to the agent's face. People began responding all around the table.
"Where Kynes leads, people follow," Jessica thought. "He has told us he sides with Paul. What's the secret of his power? It can't be because he's judge of the change. That's temporary. And certainly not because he's a civil servant.
She removed her hand from the Christ knife hilt, lifted her flagon to Kynes, who responded in kind. Only Paul and the banker.
Sue, Sue, what an idiotic nickname, Jessica thought.
Remained empty-handed. The banker's attention stayed fixed on Kynes. Paul stared at his plate.
I was handling it correctly, Paul thought. Why do they interfere?
He glanced covertly at the male guest nearest him. Prepare for violence? From whom? Certainly not from that banker fellow. Halleck stirred, spoke as though to no one in particular, directing his words over the heads of the guests across from him.
In our society, people shouldn't be quick to take offense. It's frequently suicidal.
He looked at the still-seat manufacturer's daughter beside him.
Don't you think so, miss?
Oh, yes. Yes, indeed I do, she said. There's too much violence. It makes me sick. And lots of times no offense is meant, but people die anyway. It doesn't make sense.
Indeed it doesn't, Halleck said.
Jessica saw the near perfection of the girl's act, realized,
that empty-headed little female is not an empty-headed little female.
She saw then the pattern of the threat and understood that Halleck, too, had detected it. They had planned to lure Paul with sex. Jessica relaxed. Her son had probably been the first to see it. His training hadn't overlooked that obvious gambit. Kynes spoke to the banker.
Isn't another apology in order?
The banker turned a sickly grin toward Jessica, said,
My lady, I fear I've overindulged in your wines. You serve potent drink at table, and I'm not accustomed to it.
Jessica heard the venom beneath his tone, spoke sweetly.
When strangers meet, great allowance should be made for differences of custom and training.
Thank you, my lady, he said.
The dark-haired companion of the stillsuit manufacturer leaned toward Jessica, said,
The Duke spoke of our being secure here. I do hope that doesn't mean more fighting.
She was directed to lead the conversation this way, Jessica thought.
Likely this will prove unimportant, Jessica said. But there's so much detail requiring the Duke's personal attention in these times. As long as enmity continues between Atreides and Harkonnen, we cannot be too careful. The Duke has sworn canly. He will leave no Harkonnen agent alive on Arrakis, of course.
She glanced at the Guild Bank agent.
And the conventions, naturally, support him in this.
She shifted her attention to Kynes.
Is this not so, Dr. Kynes?
Indeed it is, Kynes said.
The stillsuit manufacturer pulled his companion gently back. She looked at him, said,
I do believe I'll eat something now. I'd like some of that bird dish you served earlier.
Jessica signaled a servant, turned to the banker.
And you, sir, were speaking of birds earlier and of their habits. I find so many interesting things about Arrakis. Tell me, where is the spice found? Do the hunters go deep into the desert?
Oh, no, my lady, he said. Very little's known of the deep desert, and almost nothing of the southern regions.
There's a tale that a great motherload of spice is to be found in the southern reaches, Kynes said. But I suspect it was an imaginative invention made solely for purposes of a song. Some daring spice hunters do, on occasion, penetrate into the edge of the central belt, but that's extremely dangerous. Navigation is uncertain, storms are frequent. Casualties increase dramatically the farther you operate from shield wall bases. It hasn't been found profitable to venture too far south. Perhaps if we had a weather satellite...
Boot looked up, spoke around a mouthful of food.
It said the Fremen travel there, that they go anywhere and have hunted out soaks and sipwells, even in the southern latitudes.
Soaks and sipwells?
Jessica asked. Kynes spoke quickly.
Wild rumors, my lady. These are known on other planets, not on Arrakis. A soak is a place where water seeps to the surface, or near enough to the surface, to be found by digging according to certain signs. A sipwell is a form of soak where a person draws water through a straw. So it is said.
There's deception in his words, Jessica thought. Why is he lying? Paul wondered.
How very interesting, Jessica said, and she thought, It is said. What a curious speech mannerism they have here. If they only knew what it reveals about their dependence on superstitions.
I've heard you have a saying, Paul said, that polish comes from the cities, wisdom from the desert.
"There are many sayings on Arrakis,"
Kine said. Before Jessica could frame a new question, a servant bent over her with a note. She opened it, saw the Duke's handwriting and code signs, scanned it.
"You'll all be delighted to know," she said, "that our Duke sends his reassurances. The matter which called him away has been settled. The missing carryall has been found.